Tov to everyone. Chol Mazinim. We read this week the Sedra of Truma, which deals, of course, with the directions to build a Mishkan. First, it lists all the materials that will be used in the Mishkan, and then the Kelim in order. But we'll spend a lot of time on the Midrashim, on the first Pasuk, beginning with number one. So the Torah says, God said to Moshe, Daber b'nei Israel, v'yikuchu li truma. They should take from me a truma. Truma means an offering. Me'eis kolish asher yedzenu libo tikus trumasi. From each person who wants to donate, we take his offering. V'yikuchu li truma. Alright, so all the Mefarshim comment that the word is a strange word. Alright, what does v'yikuchu mean? Take for me. We don't take for me, we give. The more appropriate word would have been, in context, since we're talking about a truma, v'yarimuli truma, raise the truma, or v'yitnuli truma, give me the truma. Yikhu, to take, is something we do. When we give something, we're not really taking it, we're giving it. It's not the same. So then what does the pasuk mean? Why was that word chosen? Many different commentaries on this particular issue. So we'll start with the first Medrash on the Sedra. V'yikhu li truma, hado d'chsiv. This is the reference to the pasuk in Mishle. We say this pasuk every time we return the Torah to the Aron HaKodesh. Ki lekach tov nasati lochem, torasi al tazovu. Lekach tov means a good teaching. Lekach, a lesson. A good teaching I've given to you. Torasi al tazovu, do not abandon, do not forsake my Torah. We say this as we're putting the Torah away Mondays and Thursdays, Shabbos morning, Shabbos afternoon. In the Pasuk, you have that same phraseology. Lekach tov, I've given you something good, but nasati, I've given it. Lekach means to take, nasati means to give. Al tazovu. So now the Medrash explains. Al tazovu es hamikach shenasati lachem. Do not abandon the merchandise, so to speak, that I've given to you. Yesh lecha adam shelokach mikach. Think of a person who buys something. Yesh bo zahav, ein bo kasef. Yesh bo kesef, ein bo zahav. Something that has gold in it does not have silver in it. Something that has silver in it does not have gold in it. Aval hamikach shenasati lachem. But the gift, so to speak, or the substance, the merchandise that I gave to you, yesh bo chosef, it has silver in it. Shenemar imras Hashem amoros taoros kesef tsaruf, that God's utterances are imros taoros, pure utterances like refined silver. It also has Zohov, Yesh Bo Zohov, it's gold as well. Shenemar, the Torah is described in Tehillim as Hanechpodim Zohov Umipoz Rav. It's even more precious than silver, I mean gold rather, and fine silver. Okay, what's the comparison here? What does this mean, firstly, that a person who buys something of gold, he's upset that there's no silver in it? Silver, there's no gold in it. Next, Yesh Odom Lokech Sodos Avolo Kramim. Kramim v'lo sados. There are people who buy fields of wheat, but not vineyards. It's not a vineyard. Missing out. Others buy vineyards, but not fields of wheat. Avol hamikach hazeh, yesh bo sados, yesh bo kramim. Torah has everything. It's like a field of wheat and a vineyard of grapes. Shenema shlochayich pardes rimonim. Shachach, the gift that I've given you is like an orchard of pomegranates, meaning has everything that a person wants. Okay, what are we talking about? What's the limud from the Medrash? How are we to understand Torah and God's gifts to us? And getting back to the first question, why does the Torah say v'yikhu li truma instead of v'yitnu or some other such expression? Now take this first point. Yesh lecha adam shalkech mikach, yesh bo zahav, ein bo kasef. Yesh bo kesef, ein bo zahav. Person buys something, if he buys something of gold, it lacks the qualities of silver. If you buy something of silver, it lacks the qualities of gold. Okay? All right, that's obvious. People buy jewelry. It's gold, silver. They know what they're buying. So why would someone buy gold and regret that it's not silver, or vice versa? So the answer is that each substance has its own virtues and its own deficiencies. And everybody knows this. You want one thing because it has certain qualities, certain dimensions. It matches this, you're attracted to the piece, etc. But it lacks other things. So when the Medrash is talking about people, by the way, everyone see, when the Medrash is talking about Adam Shalkech Mikach Yesh Bo Zov Ein Bo Kasav Yesh Bo Kasav Ein Bo Zov, it's discussing, I think, a phenomenon in human nature of which we should all be aware. People may like something, but there's a typology that's drawn to what's missing more than what is there. And that's a problem of life. That's a problem of how we look at the world, of how we evaluate people, just how we maneuver, how we navigate the world. Added to that, there are people who will not like what they have as much as they hate what someone else has that they don't. In other words, they'll judge they'll assess the enjoyability of their possessions not by how much pleasure it gives them, but almost by reference to other people as well, and what they have or they don't have, as if there's a hierarchy that exists between human beings, and our barometer of happiness is tied to someone else's happiness or unhappiness. I just finished reading a book about the culture of Washington, D.C. So someone said, I forget who quoted it, goes back even before this particular era, that it's in life, it's not enough to succeed. You have to hope that other people fail too. All right? What a perverted sense of reality. But do not underestimate how prevalent that is. It's not only my success which is meaningful to me, it's that my success gives me an edge over someone else, as if life is only, especially in material sense, an endless competition. That is a terrible flaw, that people really are destroyed, or at least their enjoyment of life is greatly hindered because they can't appreciate what they have because others seem to have more. The one with a two-car garage, three-car garage, or a four-car garage, because Ein L'Dover Sof, the competition that exists in materiality is a Western phenomenon. Undoubtedly, it exists in our world also, but it's a devastating phenomenon to one's for one's personal happiness. And therefore, at least this point of the Medrash is talking about, to live in such a way that the dominant force in our lives is to see what's missing rather than what's there, is a debilitating way of living. And it's true materially, it's true of people, right? People will evaluate friends, relatives, even people close to them, halavai we should do to ourselves, based on what's missing, on the flaw that they see, rather than what's good about the person, how there could be compatibility between one or the other. I remember many years ago, I think even Spoken Shul maybe mentioned this here, David Cohn of Guli Ivitz in Manhattan, in Brooklyn, said that he found that the modern dating scene is two people going out with the hopes of discovering the flaw in each other that renders them unmarriageable. All right? And if you think about it, there's a lot of truth to it. People will see, you know, especially those who have the lists of 10, 15 qualities they want in a potential spouse. Okay? None of us would have gotten married if it was a list of the other. But if someone has 12 or 15, you think it's pretty good, right? No, because three are missing. And that's what we're talking about here. Person has kesef, so kesef, you enjoy the kesef. What do you think about the zav then? The zav is not appropriate then, and vice versa. So what's the context here? The context really is in Torah, because often you find, and certainly part of our modern world, people are drawn to the parts of Torah they don't like, that most trouble them and most challenge them, rather looking at the Torah system as one that is not only perfect, but for the most part is compatible with what we want and need in life. Are the parts of Torah that are going to challenge all of us? Of course, that's the very nature of Torah. And then the question becomes, what do we want to do with those parts? Do we want to change them? Want to amend them? Want to ignore them? Or do we want to change ourselves to conform with those parts? That becomes the issue. So the Torah is given to us, right? But we have to treat the Torah as if it is something acquired. And we have to look at the dimensions of Torah first that make the Torah into a system that is not compatible with human nature, but conforms with our truest desires in life, which is able to express and fulfill our greatest needs in life, rather than focus on the things that seem to challenge us or deprive us of certain things that we would want. You know, it's an old cliche, but it's like looking at Shabbos only in terms of what you can't do. And then Shabbos becomes a very painful day. If you look at Shabbos only in terms of what you can't do, then in fact, it's a day that seems onerous. But if you look at Shabbos as a day of really what you can do, not just what you must do, but what you can do, and the fulfillment that's implicit in doing those things that you can do, then it's completely different. So what's the difference here? That's the case of Kesev Ezov. What's the difference between that and Sadosu Kramim, fields and vineyards? It seems like the same point, right? What's the difference between the value of field, of the relative value of gold versus silver, and fields versus vineyards? Want to venture a guess? There's no right answer, by the way. Can't be wrong. I can only say what I think, just to, you know, try to work through the categories. So I think the answer is that in gold versus silver, there is a hierarchy of value. Gold is worth more than silver. That's just the way it is. But Sadosu Kravim are not like that. They're both valuable in their own way. They're just different. You need both, all right? You don't need really gold and silver. You could do with one or the other. But Sadosu Kramim, you need fields, you need vineyards. You need fields to produce wheat for bread. You need the Kramim to produce the grapes, produce the wine. So in fact, Torah has different aspects also. There's a Zohav and a Kesef in Torah, all right? But there's also Sadosu Kramim in Torah. They're different aspects of Torah. And a person will be drawn, like the case here, Yesh Adam lo keach sados avolo kramim, kramim velo sados. Aval amikach hazeh, yesh bo sados ukramim. Torah has everything. Torah has the different aspects. They fulfill different needs. Just like the sados fill one need, and the kramim fill another need. So too, Torah has both kesef and both zohav in it. It has mitzvos that are, and all mitzvos are valuable, of course, but it has mitzvos that are ikarim, that connect to Kadosh Baruch Hu, and other things that's zahav, and other things that are kesef, that benefit our lives, that perfect us. And it's not for us to say which is zahav, which is kesef. It's all the same, but the point is, God gave us a gift that in the framework of Torah, we have everything that we need. With the kesef, with the zav, with the kramim, the sadas, it fulfills every human need if only approached properly. I said, to get back to the question, what's the v'yikhu then? V'yikhu li truma. Why does the Torah say here v'yikhu? So again, ki lekach tov nasati lochem. God gave us this lekach tov, but it's only a lekach tov when we take it for ourselves. When we embrace it. It may be given to us, but it's only when we take it, when we internalize it, we make it our own, that's when Torah really becomes a lekach. And here you find the same thing. And this, the Gros says in the Medrash Mavur, quotes it in the back, the Pasuk is saying, "Adavin kim mimcha hakol, I'm sorry, kim mimcha hakol, umiyadcha nosanu loch." The minute we say this in the davening, a person then gives his dach, it's in my Baruch David, that everything is from you, right? Ki mimcha hakol, everything is from you, umiyadcha, and from your hand, nosanu loch, we give it to you. So what does it mean from your hand we give it to you? If we're giving it to you, it's not from your hands, from our hand. So the Gra explained that wealth can be good or bad, as we know. It could benefit people, give us enjoyable lives, used for good. It could destroy people. Osher shamur l'ba'alov l'raso. There's wealth that destroys people as well. So the Gra said, we only know whether osher is good or bad by how a person uses it. If a person uses osher for maisim tovim, the chesed, use it for good deeds, then in fact, then that's the acknowledgement, umiyodcha nasanu loch. From your hand, we are giving it to you. And that's the pshat in Vayikru. To give back is when we really have taken it for ourselves. And it's true, all the money that we have is, by and large, consumed. Certainly the money that we spend on material things, it's consumed, whether it's necessaries like food, whether it's not such necessary like luxuries, but it's gone. But what a person does for another, for the person does with his money for mice and tovim, that's never gone. To build Torah is never gone. It's always used. To give tzedakah is never gone, because the impact on the other person, same as a permanent one, it's a substantive one that never ends. When we give is when we really take for ourselves. And that's the pshat in the pasuk. The kuli truma. You're giving me a truma, or taking for me a truma, that is to say, when we give the money to the mishkan, to holy causes, that's when we really take it for ourselves. That's when the money, that's when our wealth becomes defined in such a way that it's really ours. That's the first point in the first medrash. Now, two, the medrash goes on. Dover acher. Any questions? Good. Dover acher, v'chuli truma, ador d'chsev, another pasuk in Mishlei. Nivcha shem me'osher rav, mikesef u'mizahav chayin tov. Nivchar shem me'osher rav. Shem, a name, a reputation, good reputation that is preferable nivchar me'osher rav, to great wealth. Mikesef u'mizahav chayin tov, grace, good grace, is preferable to silver and gold. So the Medrash continues, Nivchar shem me'osher tov, nivchar shmo shel Moshe. Moshe's name is preferred. Shenemar, lule Moshe b'chiro, but for Moshe, God's chosen one. The pasuk continues that Moshe stepped into the breach, saved Klal Yisrael. The context is not that important here. Lule Moshe b'chiro, but for Moshe, God's chosen. V'cheinu omer, another pasuk says, we'll read in 2 weeks, V'eida'acha b'shem, I will know him with the name, meaning the shem Hashem. So Moshe's possession of the shem is preferable, me'asher shel Korach, from the wealth of Korach, shenemar chamishim u'masayim machtos. Korach, we know, is a very, very wealthy person. One of the three wealthy people in the world. One was Haman, one was Korach, the third, Warren Buffett. I don't know. There's a third also the Medrash mentions. Okay. So what's the pshat? A good name is preferable to wealth. So we know that on some level. On the other hand, we all know that there's a flip side to that. It almost sounds like a platitude. But the reality is that the way most people look at life, money confers much more than the ability to buy things. It confers status and purchases honor and sometimes friendship. And for many people, it conveys a sense of wisdom, as if they're more knowledgeable than others. It gives standing in society in ways that it really shouldn't. But nonetheless, what's the pitgam? Bal hameya, bal hadeya. The one who has the 100, he has the knowledge. What's the knowledge? He has the 100. So he could buy his way into people's hearts, into positions of leadership, prestige, etc. We know it's false, all right? We know it's false because we live it, but we know it's false because the Medrash tells us. Now here, Nivcha Shem Me'osher Rav, you have two psukim describing Moshe Rabbeinu and the shame of Moshe. One is Lulei Moshe B'chiro, and the other is Ve'edo Achav Hashem. What's the difference in the psukim? So the first represents Moshe's personal greatness. God chose Moshe, but Moshe had certain talents. But Vaydah B'Shem is that the greatness that God thrust upon him made him even greater. So two ways people acquire reputation. One, or ideally require reputation. One is through their own goodness, greatness, their own virtues. And the other is because they're given some special talent by Kadosh Baruch Hu, or given some special task by Kadosh Baruch Hu that makes them great. But all that is greater me'osher rav. What's the osher rav? Korach. So Korach is the classic case of osher shomer l'balav l'raso. In fact, the Ksav Sofer says here that Korach gave a fortune to the Mishkan, as opposed to Moshe, who gave nothing to the Mishkan. Alright? So the Korach claimed for himself a certain status that just fueled his rebellion, because he took a proprietary interest in what he had built, because he gave so much more than the others did. Nivchar Shem Mishem Entov, Osha Shomru Leba'alav L'Raso. That type of wealth destroys. You can't buy piety. And that's what Korach learned the hard way. You can't buy piety. You can't buy virtue. Really, you can't even buy reputation. For a certain amount of time, people play along with it until either they tire of it or then the money is gone. The money's gone, then a lot of the things that accompany the money, the accoutrement of money, they're gone as well. Rabbi Wine always tells a joke about the fellow who came into a fortune, and then he became a patron of the arts, head of a museum, etc., and he would choose this painting, that painting, and then God helped him and he lost his money. And they kicked him off the board because he had nothing left to contribute. So he said, look, I may have lost my money, I didn't lose my taste in art. Of course, his taste in art was dependent on his money. While he had money, he had taste. Without the money, he had a diminished taste. That's Nivchar Shem Ya'usha Rav. It's an important lesson. Now, you know, I think by and large we live it in the breach, even though we understand it intuitively. And now the Medrash continues. Amar LaKadosh Baruch Hu, Mipnei She'yesh Lecha Osher, Atom Mizgo'er, God says to Korach, because you have money, so you're going to be haughty. Nivchar Shmo Shel Moshe Mikol Oshercha Shel Kesef Shel Zov. Moshe's reputation, his name, is preferable to all your gold, all your silver. That's the end of the pasuk. Mikesef u'mizahav chein tov. Chein tov is better than all the money in the world. What's chein? What is chein? Charm, right? Sheker achein. What is charm? There's a word for it in English that's really precise. It's not really grace. It's not charm. Although it's similar, it's likability. That's what chein is. Likability. In we say sheker chein, it's a more pejorative context. But chein v'sechel tov bein Elokim v'Adam, their chein is likability. Likability is a precious attribute. It doesn't mean that a person just, you know, tries to curry favor with others. But likability is a warm personality, a winning personality. That's chein. Mikesef mizahav chein tov. Look, there are people who are just drawn to money and want to associate with those who have money. Better people are drawn to those who have chein tov, who just are likable, who are good people, good midos, good values. And that's not to say people with money can't have good values. It's true also, and there are plenty of poor people with terrible values. But nonetheless, when people are judged on a basis that is in which their wealth is irrelevant, all right, then it becomes a much more realistic, a true assessment of both the relationship and others. Eventually, you read stories. I'm trying to recall this, but it's happened in real life, and it was some sort of many, many years ago, about people made friends in college, and people started dating, and one came from an extremely wealthy family. It was only after a few months that the other, the friend, the roommate, the date, whoever, figured out that this person, was male or female, had all this money, and was from a prominent family. And the person was, why didn't you say anything? And he said, because I want to be judged for myself, not because of money. Money is a distortive element, often, in the way we appreciate people, the way we relate to people. If we find people, encounter people, and just judge them by who they are, it's much better for them, and certainly much better for us. That's nivchar mikesef muzav chein tov. A person who has chein, so that person is one with whom it's desirable to be a friend. People think money can buy reputation, and it's partially true, but it's not real. It's not real. I know there's a business today. You might know more about it than I do. Yeah, because of Stan. There are companies that will clean up a person's Google identity, right? What's that?
They advertise it.
Right. If your name comes up on Google with a series of negative things, they'll clean it up. I guess they it all goes by hits, and somehow whatever it is they do. So I guess, in fact, today, money can buy reputation, or at least avoid the harshness of a bad reputation, but it's still not, in reality, it doesn't hold. The bottom line is, before Kadosh Baruch Hu, it doesn't matter at all, and before human beings who see through it, who are not as superficial, it also doesn't matter. So that's also Nivchar Shem Mishemen Tov, Mihosha Rav, Mikesev Umizahav Chein Tov. Okay, next, Dover Acher, number three. The Yikhuli Truma. Hadao Dichsiv, Torah Tziva Lono Moshe. All right, in each case, by the way, I don't want to go into it too much, but in each case there's some reference why it's related to the Ikhuli Truma, but the passages are important and interesting on their own. That's the Pasuk Hadao Dichsiv, Torah Tziva Lono Moshe, Marasha Kilas Yaakov. That Moshe commanded us the Torah. So Darash Rabbi Simlai, it's Gemara in the end of Makos as well. Taryag mitzvos nitnu liYisrael ayidei Moshe. We were given 613 commandments through Moshe. Shekem minyan Torah. That is the count of Torah, the enumeration of Torah. Ah, what's the gematria of Torah? 611, not 613. 406, 205. Tush, tuf, vav, resh, hey. Vim tomar einon elo tarya. If we would say that the number, the enumeration is only 611. Ushtayim heichon heim. Where are the other two from? Elo Omri will say, Torah tziva lano Moshe. Moshe gave us 611 mitzvos. Ushnayim mipiagvura. Omri rabbanon, anochi veloyilcha mipiagvura shmaum. God is the one. We heard God's voice directly when God said in the Sarsa Dibros, Anochi and Loyilacha, as the Gemara says, and the Torah intimates later, Parshas Ekev, we're only able to withstand two of the Dibros from God's voice directly, Mipiagvura, and then the people begged Moshe that they didn't want to hear God's voice anymore, that they wanted to hear him say the rest, and God conveyed it to him, and that was the pattern for the rest of the Torah. Why did they want? Why did they want to hear God for all dead? So what does that mean? Neshama left them.
They were like dead.
Well, dead is very strong.
Okay, so. But if Neshama leaves you, you're.
The Neshama's left. So what? It's a metaphor. What it means is that they were no longer human beings. A human being has free will. The reality of God was so overpowering. They felt their humanity was leaving them, and they would be robotic. They said to Moshe, "V'ata daber elenu, you speak to us. If you speak to us, you know, we retain the right to say, hey, it's only Moshe, it's not God. It's only Moshe, he's just a human being, right? But that's how the psychological process plays. If God says something, anoch li'ilacha, you know, lo signov, lo tirtzach, lo tinach, etc., the reality is just so overwhelming that it cannot be denied. And even the human beings who would hear it would find that their Bechira Chavshus is almost eradicated. Almost, if not, and that's the point of the Medrash, the Neshamas left them completely eradicated. Something that you know so strong, so powerfully, is no longer subject to real Bechira anymore. And that's like this in life too. You know, we recognize this also discussed it many times, Rav Dessler's essay in Michtam Elyon on the Bechira point that everybody has. Everyone has a point below which we don't make free choices anymore. It's just part of us. There's no taiva, no desire to the opposite. And so it's not even a choice that's being made. Whereas where the Bechira point is where choice begins, moral choice begins. What's below the Bechira point? I always use the example. I'm not tempted to smoke on Shabbos, smoke cigarettes. I don't smoke during the week, all right? I just have no time for it. So, in fact, I remember it was always a big deal when I was growing up, and you see, in the early part of the century, smoking on Shabbos was considered like the epitome of Chil Shabbos. Today, it's almost a non-entity, because most people don't smoke. Many do, I think it's still 1 in 5, but most people don't. But you can't say it's an act of Bechira when I choose not to smoke on Shabbos. It's not an act of Bechira. It's done. It's settled. What else can I say? But there are many other things in life that are not as settled. That in fact there's a moral choice. There's a tug of war between our two sides. That's where the Bechira point is. In this case, when they said to Moshe, "Va'atad aberei leilu, you speak to us," it's because they felt that the Bechira point would reach a level that exceeded their humanity, and they'd no longer be real human beings. That's Neshama's leaving. Yes?
Why was it up to them
to decide whether they'd want to hear or not? It's a very good question. It's because we were the Mekabel HaTorah. We had to accept the Torah. We had to accept it willingly. All right? Now, we all know Chazal, we've discussed it as well, as a coercive element in Maamar HaSinai, Kof Alem Har Kegigis. But what that means is not that it was coerced in terms of a threat. So like Tosfos is there in Shabbos, and we learn elsewhere, it means, again, the reality of Sinai was so much, it would be like denying God, would be like denying that it's light outside. Or that it's cold outside. It's just obvious. It's tangible. It's substantive. There's almost a mamushus to God's existence that you don't ordinarily have. Think back to Kriyas Yam Suf and just analogize to here. Zekeli van Vehu, as if Hereu Betzma. God's presence was so real, so tangible, as if people could point to it. Zekeli, this is my God. I'll glorify him. At the very high level of existence. When it came to Maamar HaSinai, that added to it. But we had to accept the Torah. We're the ones who had to say Nasa v'Nishma, and therefore the terms of the acceptance were really ours. And that's what that's what Chazal is conveying there. So here you have, in fact, Torah is not even the point, but Torah Tziva Lot on Moshe, that Moshe commanded us most of the mitzvahs, except for two, that we heard from God. We retained our humanity, in the sense we retained the Bechira Chavshus, but that became the test of life. All right, you could say, there's certain times in life we wish that the tug of war wasn't as compelling, wasn't as powerful, and we'd be able to have an easier battle. But that's not reality. So life becomes that type of Mechamas HaYetzer. It's a struggle of the Yetzirah versus the Yetzirah Tov. That's not even the point here, but I would mention it. Amar LaMoshe. Shenemar, I'm sorry, Vitarya Amar LaMoshe. Moshe Rabbeinu taught us Tav Reishut Aleph. Shenemar Torah Tzivonu Moshe, Morasho Kilas Yaakov. Al Tikre Morasho, Ela Yerusha. Don't read it Morasho, a heritage, a legacy. Ela Yerusha, an inheritance. Yerusha Eli Yisrael. The Torah is an inheritance to the Jewish people. We inherit the Torah. Alright? La'olam. Forever. Moshal Ben Malachim Shenishba. Analogy to a prince who was captured. Shukatim, he was young. Lumdina Sayam, taken to a foreign land. Afil, but he knew who he was. And he knew where he was from. Afilu l'achar kama shonim eino vosh mipneishu omer l'irusha savosayni chozer. Even if he's away from his kingdom that he inherited for many years, he will not be embarrassed to return, because he'll say, that's the inheritance of my fathers. That's mine. I claim it legally and morally. It's mine. Kach Talmud Chacham shu parish min haTorah. So to a Talmud Chacham who leaves the study of Torah, v'holach v'hisasek b'dvar macherim, and he gets involved in other things, has to make a living, can't learn as much as he once did. Well, that still happens, I guess. Afilu achar kama shanim hu mevakesh lachzor, and then after a number of years he wants to go back into the world of Torah, eino vosh, he should not be embarrassed. V'pnei shomer liyerusha salvosai ani chazer, I'm going back to the inheritance of my fathers. Okay, interesting thing. Well, what's the problem with this? What does it say in Avos about Torah? She'ein a Yerusha loch. It's not a Yerusha. On the contrary, it's not a Yerusha because a Yerusha can be squandered. A Yerusha can be lost. But the Torah is a Morasha. It's part of us. It's part of our heritage. It's there or not. So what does it mean then, ein a Yerusha loch, or that it is a Yerusha? So what the Medrash is telling us here, in terms of the Torah being a Yerusha, is that the Torah should never be perceived as alien to a Jew, as something that's foreign, something to which we cannot relate, something strange. Rather, the Torah inherently connects to every Jew. Now again, it's a Yerusha that we can squander, but on the other hand, it is a Yerusha also in the sense that we always have, we're always drawn back to it. There's an indelible connection between the Jew and the Torah. I mentioned once, a number of years ago, Rav Neria writes, Rav Moshe Tzvi Neria Zechatzadok Livracha, the founder of Bnei Akiva, so there are two times in the Torah that Morasha is used. One is here, famous pasuk, teach children, Torah Tziva Lodom Hashem Morasha Kilos Yaakov, and what's the other one? In Parshas Vayera, V'nasati Lachem Morasha Ani Hashem, referring to Eretz Yisrael. The land of Israel is a Morasha, and Torah is a Morasha. The camp is also a Morasha. But the two, Torah and Eretz Yisrael, those are the two. What's the Morasha? Alright. And by the way, each of them, the Torah is the Morasha, but we're told She'en Yerushalach, right? And even Eretz Yisrael is the Yerusha. So the end of Parshas Bo, Rashi quotes the Medrash that you'll go conquer Eretz Yisrael because it's also not a Yerusha. You have to go out and get it. You're not inheriting it. The Magash HaKesef on a silver platter, you have to go out and capture it. So what's the difference? So Neria said, there are times when it's given to us because otherwise we would not accept it. And there are times we have to earn it and maintain it, or it will be forfeited. When it's given to us, that's when it's a Yerusha. We're given to us. How does a Yerusha come to a person? Baal karcham, against their will. Rachman al-Slan, somebody dies and they inherit. That's against their will. But a Morasha has to be embraced. It has to be accepted. It has to be earned. It has to be implemented. It has to be fostered so that it's not lost. Those are the two dimensions. But when we are receptive to it, then in fact it's natural. There's a natural bond between the Jew and Torah and between the Jew and Eretz Yisrael. It is a natural bond. And if we think about it, even our own lives, I think most Jews that go to Israel, right away they feel a comfort level there. I know it happened to me the first time that I went, that I was a child. You just feel a comfort level that you don't feel elsewhere, as if the land fulfills a certain inchoate need or inchoate attribute that a Jew has. It's not necessarily explicable, but nonetheless it's felt very strongly. I thought, reflecting on it, because it still happens every time I go, it could be that we live in the exile, but then you go to Israel and you're in a majority Jewish environment and there's Hebrew all around, so just feel it awakens a part of the soul that is otherwise dormant. But I think it's even more than that. I think it's even less decipherable, that it's just something in the soul of the Jew that connects us to Torah and to Eretz Yisrael, and that's what makes it a Morasha. Now we know there's something else, that pasuk, the famous drasha, Dover Acher, Al Tikore Morasha Elo Me'orasa. Don't read the pasuk as if it said Morasha, a heritage, but Me'orasa, betrothed. All the time, betrothed means you're not fully married. technically it means you've given kiddushin already, but not chuppah. But let's look in our context. It means that to say you're engaged, all right? Person who's engaged, what are they doing? They are, they're just trying to hang around their future father-in-law's house to see their fiancé, and they're just hanging around. But Misha Nisa, once they marry, Hare Aviha Ba'etzla, then they're ready to set up their own home. And now her father has to come visit in their house if he wants to be seen. Kach, same thing here. Ad shlo nitna Torah liYisrael, before the Torah was given, Umosha Allah El Elokim, Moshe had to ascend Mount Sinai to receive the Torah, to learn the Torah. Misha nitna Torah, once the Torah was given, Amar Kadosh Baruch Hu leMoshe, God said to Moshe, Ve'asuli Migdash v'shachanti v'sacham, as if now Kevyachol, God the father-in-law, comes to us and says, okay, now I have to come to you. Before you went to me to the Torah, Mount Har Sinai, now I have to come to you, Vasuli Mikdash, Vishachanti Visacham. What's the pshat? So of course, before marriage, there's a certain eagerness that exists, there's anticipation, and a person always wants to be around their intended. So in fact, they have to go out, but it's artificial. They have a relationship, but the relationship has not really been cemented. But after marriage, then they build their home. And it's in their home that the Torah has to be carried out. It's not linked to Shemaim anymore, all right? In context, it's linked to the Mishkan. In other words, once we receive the Torah, then we're worthy to have a Mishkan, but just to take it to the next level. Once we have the Torah, we don't go to heaven to find the Torah. We don't even go to shul to find the Torah. Where do we have to find the Torah? In our homes, exactly. In our homes. That's the difference me'orasah now and after when we become married to it. And finally, again, Al Tikare Marasha Ela Me'orasah Me'lamed Shatorah Arusali Yisrael, the Torah is betrothed to us. Shenema v'erastich li le'olam, I'll be betrothed to you forever. Pasuk Yosheya. This naftar for Parshas Bamidbar. Uminayin shika eishes ish leumos ha'olam. How do we know the Torah is like an eishes ish, like a married woman? The Torah is engaged to us, but the Torah for the nations of the world is like a someone married to someone else, an eishes ish. Shenemar, Pasuk says in Mishle, Hayachte ish eish b'cheiko uvegodov los yisla'rafno. Should a person put fire in his bosom, and his clothing won't burn? In the halach ish al gechalim, viraglov lo tichaveno. Should a person walk on hot coals and expect that his feet not be burned? Kain haba el eishes reiv. So too, someone who lives with his friend's wife, meaning eishes ish. What's the pshat? So before Matan Torah, it was like me'ores aslanu. It was betrothed to us. After Matan Torah, the Torah is married to us. So therefore, the nations of the world, if they try to grab the Torah for themselves, they're guilty of infidelity. What's the pshat? So it goes back to the other points as well. There are aspects of Torah, for sure, that apply to non-Jews. Shev Mitzvah B'nai Noach, Adam Rishon, creation of all men, Tzalem Elokim, etc. But the essence of Torah is only for Klal Yisrael. So a non-Jew tries to embrace the Torah, tries to live in such a way, as he's observing the Torah, he's really intruding on the relationship that God has with the Jewish people through the Torah. He's claiming the covenant for himself, when in fact, he has no right to do that. In fact, as a general halacha, not allowed to teach Torah to non-Jews. And add to that, of interesting... interesting idea. Someone asked about it last week. Gemara says, Goisha Shavas Chayv Misa. Non-Jew that observes Shabbos is Chayv Misa. Alright? That's what we tell people, even if they're in the early stages of Geirus, they have to stop becoming Shomer Shabbos. They should do one type of Avera, one sin. Even if they're Abanon. Carry with his Noah, even a Carmelis, carry key, something like that. He has an old joke about that. You have time for a joke? An old joke? I always have time for a joke. Okay. So two guys are learning the Chavrusa for 20 years, all right? But they just learn. They don't really know each other's personal lives. After 20 years, one guy says to the other, I want to invite you to my son's bar mitzvah, give you an aliyah. So he said, thank you very much, I'll come, but I can't get an aliyah. He says, why not? He says, because I'm not Jewish. He said, what do you mean you're not Jewish? What are you doing here? We're learning all these years. He says, yeah, I love learning Torah, but I'm not Jewish. He says, if I see you in shul, you observe Shabbos. He said, yeah, I observe Shabbos, but I have to do one avera every Shabbos, so I'm not over Geisha Shabbos, Chayav Misa. Right? So he said, so what do you do? So the guy said, I carry a key every Shabbos. So the fellow thinks for him, he says, one second, we have an Erev in town. So he says, I don't hold by that Erev. Anyway, that's the joke. What's the pshat? Geisha Shabbos Chayav Misa? So the pshat is that, again, Shabbos is an os, it's a bris, it's a sign of the covenant between God and the Jewish people. If a non-Jew would intrude on that, as if God commanded him to do the same, that would be encroaching improperly on the relationship between God and the Jewish people. Think it's his own. That's the Eishes Ish. Before, the Torah was Ora Solanu. Now, the Torah is married to us, and therefore, it's not for others. Okay, let's see. Let's try to do two other points quickly. Number four. Vizos HaTrumo. Hey, you know the third pasuk of the Sedra. Vizos HaTrumo. Omer Rav Tavyomi. Vishosh Yigia Zmano Sheyakov Min Lipata Min Olam. When it came time for Yaakov to die, Karl Levanov called his children, said to them, Hey, you Yodim Shakarish Baruch Hu Asud Lama Levnechem Lasos Mishkan. You should know that in the future God is going to command you to build a Mishkan. Remember, they're in Mitzrayim now. Eliyu Kol Tzrachav Muchana B'yedchem. But everything should be prepared for you before. Shenemar. God should be with you. Would you think that while Yaakov was alive, God was not with his sons? That now Yaakov should say, God should be with you? This is what he said. In the future, God will say, Vasuli Mikdash, build for me, make for me a Mikdash. And God descends and rests his presence upon you. Shenemar, v'shachanti b'socham. V'yesh mehem sheskinu atzmo l'dvorim, yesh mehem sheshachachu. Some people prepared for that day when God would ask them to build the Mishkan, and some forgot about it. U'kshabar Moshe v'asa Mishkan, when Moshe came and built the Mishkan, yesh mehem sheviu me'atzmon. Some had materials to bring, yesh mehem shelo eviu. Some had nothing to bring, ela mimasha yamunach b'yodo, except what they happened to have in the hands of the time. Shekein omer, v'chol ish, asher nimso ito t'chel sargamon, v'chol asher nimso ito atzeishi. Some people had the materials, the wool, the crimson, the precious stones, the acacia wood, the acacia tree. The question is, from where do they get all these materials? All right, where does a nation of slaves, for example, find acacia wood, atzei tim, in the middle of the desert? Yes.
That was prepared in advance and brought down to
Israel. Oh, so that's the Medrash. That's exactly right. Yaakov was the one who brought with him from Eretz Canaan the acacia wood, kept it there, and said that this will be for you when Moshe, when you are asked to build the Mishkan. Okay. That's Yaakov's role. The others had their roles. A lot of the stones came from the gold and silver came from the spoils of Egypt. Stones came from the spoils of Mitzrayim, other stones came from along with the Mon, whatever it is. But what's this pshat, like Aviva said about Yaakov? Yaakov brought this with him from Canaan, and he notified his sons to prepare ahead. What's the pshat? It means a parent has to be able to see long-term objectives and to act upon them as well. You can't just anticipate the future, but you have to give children the wherewithal to prepare for that future as well. So we see long term both in terms of the goal as well as how to get there. The destination and how to arrive there as well. So it's not, we have to teach a child that the same thing that we do, that there's some things that we do for which we'll have no immediate gratification. It's really one of the most important lessons in life today. I hope Gabrielle is listening to this. The certain things that we do now that Yaakov did, when Yaakov brought with him the Atzei Shittim, or others had spoils in Egypt, it really had no present value to Yaakov. It was only something that he preserved for the future. There are many things for us that that have no present value, but nonetheless we do them, we preserve them, so the next generation and two generations will have that as well. Part of it is the preparation, and part of it is also the capacity to impart to children the notion of delayed gratification, that they need not have everything they want, and they certainly need not have everything they want right now. Can't live like that. That's immaturity. Maturity means the ability to wait, to delay for more opportune time, or simply to delay so others will have, right? Let's take the case of Yerusha. A person can have a tremendous inheritance and then decide to spend it all on himself. You know, that's it. Every last nickel is done. Or a person can inherit, right, and spend what he feels he needs, and then keep the bulk of it for the next generation and the next generation. It all, by the way, all these families, big families, wealthy families, that people get these bequests, there are always one or two who go through the money, who do nothing productive with it, and then wind up destitute, to the annoyance of all the other relatives. To the annoyance of the other relatives. There's some who try to keep the entire estate intact, right, and distribute it properly. Others distribute it completely because they can't go, they can't work together. Just reading a few months ago, the Pritzkers, famous well-known Jewish family, well, I'm not Jewish anymore, they divided up the estate completely, the Hyatt people, I think, originally. They divide up their estate into all its various branches, so one person's money and business, they actually sold their businesses off, so there's no relation between the families. Not that they didn't get along. It took, I think, 10 years to do it, because it was, we're talking billionaires here. It took 10 years to do it, but they felt it's better for their familiar relations to that not everyone is in the same business competing with each other. So therefore everything was divided more or less equally. But even amongst the Pritzkers, there's a lo yitzlach or two. A guy who just spent all his money, drugs, whatever it is, became a motorcycle man, something that's just not, he had no interest in making money, he had interest only in spending money. That happens. That is poor parenting, because the parent has to prepare the child for the future and know that preparing for the future involves delayed gratification as well. All right, one other point. Yes, yes. Well, you could.
Seven children and six of them turned out to be great.
Right, one doesn't hear. But you're right. It's not poor. Yes, I should be more careful. It's not always poor parenting, but sometimes the message is not received. All right? Yeah, different personalities, right, right. Although, again, part of parenting is knowing that the same message will not resonate the same with every child. That's also part of parenting. But the truth is, Chad, you don't know until it's too late. All right, you can't always know what message they need, but you try to intuit. It's an imperfect science. All right, finally, let's just look at six. The planks of the Mishkan were made out of this acacia wood. Why acacia wood? Why not some other wood? God was teaching us a lesson forever. If one wants to build his home from wood, and he thinks he should then just chop down any tree, even fruit-bearing trees, Omer lo, we tell him, Umam melech malchem alachem shakol shalo, the king of all kings, everything belongs to him. And nonetheless, when he commanded us to build a mishkan, Omer lo sovi ele me'ilan she'nosa peros, build a mishkan out of wood from non-fruit-bearing trees. Atem alachas kama v'kama, certainly you should do that. Okay, what does it mean? It means you have to protect the planet. Have to protect the planet, all right? But, of course, it doesn't mean that we can't exploit the resources of the planet. That's the chivshua. You have to conquer the world. But it means that we have to make sure to appreciate each entity for its function, not rob the world of any particular entity that is going to then leave the world depleted, make sure that the sources are renewable, which much of nature is, but not all of it, but be a shomer. And this, of course, harkens back to a medrash in Bereishis, that Adam HaRishon was given the given Gan Eden l'avdo l'shamra, to work it and to preserve it. And there the Medrash says, I think the Medrash in Koheles, not in Bereishis, there the Medrash says that God said to Adam, I'm giving you the world to work, but l'shamra as well, to preserve it. Make sure you don't destroy my world. So I don't really believe that man has the capacity to destroy the world, but man certainly has the capacity to make life very difficult for people on earth by using its resources improperly and squandering it. And that's what you see. I don't want to be too prosaic, but obviously the notion of letting land lie fallow, the Shemitah here, has an ancillary benefit, not just for the people, but for the land also, right? Modern science uses that as well. You don't cultivate the land for 1 year, let it renew its strength. That idea is at the heart of the way we appreciate God's creation. To destroy God's creation wantonly is a sin. It's baltashkes. So you see, even in building holiness, even the Mishkan can't be baltashkes. If you could build with wood from trees that do not bear fruit, those trees then have a function of bearing fruit. They have to continue to give fruit to produce. Use the trees that don't, and thereby protect what God gave us. Okay, I thank you all very much.
Thank you.